Blog Talk Radio.
As the sun was setting o'er the bright May meadows of Shelmaleer, a rebel hand set the heather blazing and brought the neighbors from far and near. Then Father Murphy from all Kilcormick spurred up the rocks with a warning cry. "Ar marm," he cried, "for I've come to lead you, for Ireland's freedom we'll fight or die." He led us on against the coming soldiers, the cowardly yeomen we put to flight. 'Twas at the Harra the boys of Wexford showed Bookie's regiment how men could fight. "Look out for hirelings, King George of England. Search every kingdom that breeds a slave. For Father Murphy from the county Wexford sweeps o'er the land like a mighty wave." At Vinegar Hill, or the pleasant Slaney, our heroes vainly stood back to back. And the yeos at Tulla took Father Murphy and burned his body upon a rack. "God grant you glory, brave Father Murphy, and open heaven to all your men. The cause that called you may call tomorrow in another fight for the green again."
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. I figure this is Irish heritage here. We just got through a month of communist propaganda, and it's time to rebuild the nation. And speaking of rebuilding the nation, the stock market was up today. Yippee. Can I get a hip hip hooray? We're in trouble. We're in real trouble. We have no idea what's going on. We are a nation of sheep. We're a nation of cattle being herded into Box Canyon. So let me tell you a tale that was told to me today by an American. A guy comes in to see me, and he tells me he's in the blind business. And I said, well, there's a lot of us in the blind business today. When it comes to taxation without representation, we're all blind. But he's a different kind of blind. He's an Italian blind. He's a Venetian blind. And he's upset because his little corporation that has two people, he's the president and his partner's the vice president. They formed a corporation to protect their lives from being sued by all of the lawyers that roam the land seeking the ruin of souls. He says he dreads the day when he's working in somebody's house and he knocks over an $80,000 vase and breaks it, and he is sued. And his children are sued. Because that's how it goes in America today. Everybody sues everybody. I even hear that the people who took a dip in the Hudson and escaped the death have now joined forces to sue the airline company. No hold harmless clause, not when it comes to money. I'll never forget that the first time I saw thievery in action. Here I am, I'm trying to keep my bills down, and I'm paying automobile insurance, and a friend of mine and I are in my car, and we're in a slight of fender bender, and he tells me it's nothing personal. And actually, I shouldn't take it personally, but he's suing me. He's suing me. And because the insurance company has lots of money. Isn't that great? And that was the beginning of the end of honesty and integrity in the United States. I once rented in my business an engine crane to a guy who came in with his boys, and they were going to do an engine swap, and they were a rugged bunch. And what happened was, there is a point of no return on an engine crane. If you extend it out too far and try to lift an engine, the crane will flip out from underneath the weight of the extended arm. And sure enough, later that day, in comes the band of fools, and one guy is on crutches. And what they had done was they extended the crane too far out, and the crane flipped out, and this guy was standing there, and it hit him in the leg. So the guy's bringing the crane back because he's finished using it, and he wants his deposit back. So I give him his deposit back, and his friend on crutches, we'll call him Joey Big Mouth, turns to me and says, you know, this crane injured me today, and I'm going to sue you. And I said, no, you can't sue me, because you didn't rent the crane. You have to sue your buddy, and he has to sue me. And that was the end of the court case, because his buddy dragged him outside and gave him reasons to have two sets of crutches. And so you see, the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. But going back to the blind man and his partner are not doing too good. There's a downturn in the economy, and people are not buying blinds. So he says to his partner, you know what? We've been paying into unemployment, and I'm going to lay myself off, and I'm going to go down to the unemployment office, and I'm going to get some benefits so that we can survive as a company. And when I'm finished collecting for X amount of weeks, and then you can go down and collect. So off he goes to the unemployment office, and he files for unemployment, and he's told it's denied. And he says, why am I denied? And he says, well, because you're the president of the company. And in order for you to collect unemployment, first you must close the corporation. You must go out of business, and then you can come collect. He says, but we just want to tide ourselves over till things pick up. He said, no, you can't have any unemployment money. Welcome to the land of the free and the home of the broke. Now, with all, and of course, he's watching all of these billions that are being transferred to companies who have banks in other lands. And we're watching at the beginning of Obama-rama, lama-lama-ding-dong. And we're watching all of these sultans and sheikhs and giving themselves raises. They gave themselves a 4% increase just before they denied the blind man. I'm just thinking of a joke about a blind man. Two spinster sisters are in an apartment, and they're not dressed. It's a hot day. It's before air conditioning, and there's a knock on the door, and they go, "Who's there?" And the guy hollers back, "It's the blind man." So they said, "Okay, we could open the door because he can't see us." So they open the door, and the guy goes, "Where do you want the blinds?" So anyway, that's my little tale of woe today. This is one life in the trivial pursuit of America as it licks its wounds on the way to the American cemetery. We're in trouble. Absolutely in trouble, and I'll get a little hot and heavy a little bit later on, but in the meantime, let me give you a song about a New York City cop. The first song was about a priest who led a rebellion in the county of Wexford in Ireland, and as a result, he was a pacifist in the beginning. And he told his people to turn their arms over to the British. And after they gave up their arms, the British slaughtered them. So he turned rebel. But it was too late. Because the 10% who make the difference were already gone. And we better be very careful that our 10% that protects this nation and don't get chewed up at the expense of Democrats, who will then give the broken bodies back to the Republican Party and say, get us out of this mess, like Nixon got us out of Vietnam. Never forget that Democrats take you into the battlefield and they leave you there to die, and then they promise they will never run again. And then when a Republican comes in to heal the wounds, they blame him for the entire war. And we've yet to see how Obama is going to fare as a general. And I got a bad feeling that we're not going to do well. And I got a bad feeling that we're going to get chewed up. And I'm looking at a map of Kyrgyzstan, and I hear voices saying that the Russians have coerced the Kyrgyz to cancel the resupply airport airbase that we have been using to resupply our troops in Afghanistan. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't buy that story at all. There are other countries around there that would be willing to talk to us. And the reason that the Kyrgyz are not listening to us is because they feel we're going to be the loser. And nobody wants to be with a loser. So we better take a little map of Afghanistan and check off the surrounding countries. There's Uzbekistan, there's Tajikistan, there's Kazakhstan, there's Turkmenistan, and one of those should be friendly to us, and one of those should cooperate with us. And somebody's not doing their homework. And if I was hanging around with the boys that are hanging around the stand countries, I definitely would be laying the groundwork for friendly get-togethers with the president of Kyrgyzstan and say, if things don't work out, we'd like to come back and wait for our day. In the meantime, we got to go to Ashgabat. Ashgabat is a nice little place that's pro-American. And maybe it's time we took care of the Turkmenistanis. So I don't want to hear we have to... I don't care if we got to supply them by satellite in the sky, even though the Iranians now control a space. Yeah. And when Obama gets finished, the Iranians will control space. He's going to bring us back to Sputnik time. That's what he's going to do. This guy has no idea what he's doing. And you know what? The day's going to come when they announce he's going to speak to the people, everybody's going to turn their TV off. You wait and see. He's let all of the communists come in and take power. He's giving them a full rein, and he's not holding the reins. So we're in trouble, and we brought it on ourselves. A nation that kills 1,400,000 of its own children is in deep caca with the Almighty. A nation that bans God from schools is in deep caca with the Almighty. It's only a matter of time. A nation that gives Academy Awards to people that mock God is in trouble with the Almighty. And you think about that. A nation that steals from its old and murders its young is in trouble with God. As a matter of fact, it's only a matter of time before the Democrats amend the Ten Commandments and drop the word not. So, let me give you that tune I promised you. I got to tell you this. I just turned on Savage for a minute, and he's complaining about this communist member of parliament that's now the prime minister has come to the United States with his beggar's bowl for welfare for Great Britain, and who's gone down the tubes. They're finished. It's all over for them. They have no more country. They're gone. And he tells us, Savage does, that Gordon Brown has knighted Sir Edward Kennedy. Let me tell you something. When the British knight an Irishman, that's the greatest insult in the world to a real Irishman. But it's a compliment to the Kennedys, because the Kennedys aren't Irish. They're Irish in name only. They're a disgrace. They're an absolute disgrace. And the last time that I saw an Irishman have anything to do with the British, when they played the British National Anthem, he was a soccer player. And while they were playing the British National Anthem, he was dancing the Irish jig. And so if you're an Irishman and you've been knighted by the Queen, forget about it. But that goes to show you just how far communism has progressed in the United States. Our country is not rolling anymore. Our country is off its rocker. Every day our enemies get stronger, and we're worried about global warming. The Secretary of Treasury admitted today in hearings that the aim of the String Bean Coalition is to destroy the American oil industry. I saw it. Twice in my life I've seen how people betray a cause. Or take control very subtly, and it's not just oil, but all industry. This regime is out to destroy. They're out to destroy small business. They'll have meters on waitresses They'll have little cameras on waitresses to make sure they're not stealing tip money, not turning in the taxes on the tip money. These people, they only know one word. It's tax. It's tax on your toilet paper. It's tax on your food. It's tax on everything you do. And the utility companies are in cahoots with them. They bought off the utility companies years ago. The electric company is guaranteed a net profit. Let's say it's 9%. No matter how the economy goes, the utility company is guaranteed a net profit of 9%. So if they're not making 9%, they can raise the prices with the blessings of the government. Now, the government in return says, here's what we want you to do. On Joe Smith's electric bill, we want you to collect taxes for us. The utility companies are in bed with the government. They are a tax collector for the government. What makes you think that they're going to give you any better rates when they don't have to, because they're working for the government? They're not working for you. They're not your servant. You're their servant. And you think about that, and the next time you get a utility bill, count up the taxes on it. And see, this is what you're seeing today. Tomorrow there'll be a new tax on your utility bill. So hang in there and let me give you a tune. And before I forget, the price of oil went up $2.50 today. I'm telling you, watch the price of oil. Do not let that price of oil start to climb back up. And I'll tell you something else. You succeed in keeping that price of oil down, the government is going to bring it to $3 a gallon in gasoline. If you get the price of gas down to $1, the government is planning to put $2 on your back in the form of a gas tax. It's another form. It's easy to take from you every day. You don't even have to fill out a form. You just pull up to the pump and the government will take a nice cut. And that's what your government is doing. They're tax junkies. Do not let the price of oil climb. Oil should be $10 a barrel. No jihad taxes.
I was 18 years old when I went down to Dublin with a fistful of money and a cartload of dreams. Take your time, said me father, stop rushing like hell, and remember all is not what it seems to be. For there's fellas would cut you for the coat on your back, or the watch that you got from your mother. So take care, me young bucko, and mind yourself well, and will you give this note to me brother. At the time Uncle Benji was a policeman in Brooklyn, and me father the youngest looked after the farm. When a phone call from America said send the lad over, and the old fella said sure it wouldn't do any harm. For I've spent my life working this dirty old ground, for a few pints of porter and the smell of a pound. And sure, maybe there's something you learn or you'll see, and you can bring it back home, make it easy on me. So I landed at Kennedy, and a big yellow taxi carried me and me back through the streets and the rain. Well, me poor heart was thumping around with excitement, and I hardly even heard what the driver was saying. We came in the Shore Parkway to the flatlands in Brooklyn, to my uncle's apartment on East 53rd. I was feeling so happy, I was humming a song, and I sang, "You're as free as a bird." Well, to shorten the story, what I found out that day was that Benji got shot down in an uptown foray. And while I was flying my way to New York, poor Benji was lying in a cold city morgue. Well, I phoned up the old fella, told him the news. I could tell he could hardly stand up in his shoes. And he wept as he told me, go ahead with the plan, and not to forget, be a proud Irish man. So I went up to Nellie's beside Fordham Road, and I started to learn about lifting the load. So the heaviest thing that I carried that year was the bittersweet thoughts of my hometown so dear. I went home that December, 'cause the old fella died. Had to borrow the money from a fill on the side, and all the bright flowers and brass couldn't hide the poor wasted face of me father. I sold up the old farmyard for what it was worth, and into my bag stuck a handful of earth. Then I boarded a train and I caught me a plane, and I found myself back in the U.S. again. It's been 22 years since I've set foot in Dublin. Me kids know to use the correct knife and fork, but I'll never forget the green grass and the rivers as I keep law and order in the streets of New York. Na na na.
And to think that this country was founded by people that got fed up with taxes. And they threw the tax collectors out and sent them back to England. And now England's over here looking for tax money. Again.
Under its cords of mail, deeply the merciless foeman. and shall rue. When none his ear shall ring, born on the breeze's wingtip, on our dread war cry, O Donald the Bow. While your Desmond the war wolf is howling, fearless eagle sweeps over the plain, the fox in the streets of the city are prowling, and all would scare them are banished and slain. On with O'Donnell then, fight the old fight again. Sons of Tyrconnell are valiant and true. Make the proud Saxon feel, errands of vengeance steal, strike for your country, O'Donnell the Bull.
You know, on 911, a lot of the firemen who died were of Irish descent. And I don't know if you know this or not, but the New York City pipe band for the Emerald Society, a fire department pipe band, a buddy of mine was a fireman, and before 911 he died. And at his funeral, I walked into church late. And when I went up to receive communion, on the wings of the church, it looked like the British Army was there. I never seen so many pipers. There had to be 200 pipers there at his funeral. And at 911, they had so many funerals that the pipers were strung so thin they could only send one per fireman. And we've forgotten 911. And you know what Santayana says? Those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. And I know that that's what's happening to us right now. And what's really scary to me is that letter that allegedly was sent to Putin by Obama, saying he would be willing to trade Poland and Czechoslovakia for peace with Iran. Now, you know what cracks me up about the Russians helping the Iranians? The Russians are the ones who killed the Afghanis. The Russians are the reason that Charlie Wilson got Stinger missiles to the Afghanis. And of course the left will tell you we armed bin Laden. Well, we armed Joseph Stalin too. And what do they say? Politics make strange bedfellows. Expediency sometimes has to bypass practicality. And as George Patton says, a plan executed today is better than a better plan executed a week later. And when in doubt, attack. But here are the Russians, and they're arming the Iranians with nukes. And the Iranians are supposed to be the Islamists who don't want anything to do with the infidel. And they're taking arms from the same people who killed the Afghani people. And you think about that. And how can they get away with it? How can everybody buy that garbage? So speaking of Iran, I'll tell you about chopping off thieves' hands, because they're revising the laws. They're tempering. They're getting very democratic. Chopping off thieves' hands is very rare. Cases of kisas, executions in retaliation for murder, are more common. Gorban al-Najaf Abadi says, chopping off the hands of thieves is very rare. Cases of quisas, that's executions in retaliation for murder, are more common. Of course, the murder of women has, that's not a crime. That's an objective. There's nothing like burying a woman up to above her waist so she can't bend to duck at the stones that they're going to throw at her. Or hang her off the back of a tow truck early in the morning in the public square. Isn't it wonderful? And who's worse? The Tehran mullahs or Pol Pot? At least Pol Pot killed everybody. Here the Iranians are only killing women. What do? Get off work early on Friday to go home and beat their wives? Kisas is the individual prerogative of the victim's family, and the government does not intervene in this matter. One of the issues protested by the West is the kisas. They confuse kisas with the death penalty. The kisas is not up to the government. It is the prerogative of the victim's family. For example, if a person is killed and the killer's father requests it, we may ask the victim's family to absolve. Excuse me, the family of this is within my authority, but we have no right to pressure them. It is a family whose member was killed, sometime with extreme brutality. I would say it's all the time. The world should know that the Islamic Republic of Iran, the kisas is the prerogative of the victim's family. It is not the prerogative or business of the government, and therefore the government cannot revoke it or refrain from carrying it out. It is different with regard to the death penalty. Kisas, as I said, is the prerogative of individuals, and when a person is killed in a kisas execution, it is not called the death penalty. When it comes to the death penalty, we have judges and the courts. If you want to freelance, that's okay, as long as you shout Allahu Akbar. And the courts issue a verdict according to the Sharia. Islam wants to abolish the lack of financial and economic safety, and therefore it orders the chopping off of hands. As for chopping off hands, these sentences are meant as a deterrent. Islam wants to abolish the lack of financial and economic safety, and therefore it orders the chopping off of hands. This prevents the thief from stealing again. We should not have mercy on someone who steals repeatedly. If he steals only once, that's okay. Yeah, if he's in government, that's a different story. This punishment is better than prisons. It sure is cheaper. You don't have to feed them and clothe them. With all their negative effects, especially when prisons like Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib are concerned. Yeah, there's nothing. What would you rather have? Here's the sentence. You're now a prisoner in an American Abu Ghraib. And the judge says, what would you rather have, a pair of panties on your head, or we're going to chop your hand off? Can I come back in 2 weeks with the decision? And, of course, the Americans who committed all these crimes in Guantanamo, how come nobody takes a look at their barbaric deeds? Yeah, this torture is hundreds of times worse than the chopping off of hands. Yeah, show me one person in the world who would... You know what? Don't ask me. You know who you ask? Ask the Germans. Ask the Germans when the Russians were coming. Which side did they flee to? Which side of Germany did they flee to? They couldn't wait to get to the American sector. And I met POWs in Germany in the 50s who were the most friendly Germans you'd ever want to meet. As soon as they seen you were an American, they loved you. And they would say, I was in Louisiana, I was a POW. And he was treated good. And we've always treated our POWs fairly. If we catch you on the battlefield, we may not bring you back to a prison. And that's the fortunes of war. And if you want to see a serious United States, wait till we start carrying flamethrowers again. And the day may come when we have to do that. And then we can use Darwin's theory called the survival of the fittest. Imprisonment and the divine punishments are two different things. We have unfortunately adopted prisons from the West. Sometimes prisons do not yield positive results. Quite the opposite. It's not desirable to impose prison sentences. There is no such thing in Islam. I mean, just cut off a hand. Do you know, if they had Sharia law in the House and the Senate, they'd have to do away with pens and pencils, because all the senators and congressmen would be writing with their feet. Let me give you an Irish heritage tune.
Oh, Father dear, and I often hear you speak of Erin's Isle. Her lofty scenes, her valleys green, her mountains rude and wild. They say it is a lovely land wherein a prince might dwell. Then why did you abandon it? Oh, the reason to me tell. My son, I loved my native land with energy and pride, till a blight came over all my crops and my sheep and cattle died. The rents and taxes were to pay, and I could not them redeem. And that's the cruel reason I left old Skibbereen. 'Tis well I do remember the bleak November day, when the bailiff and the landlord came to drive us all away. They set the roof on fire with their cursed English spleen, and that's another reason I left old Skibbereen. Oh, your mother, to God rest her soul, lay on the snowy ground. She fainted in her anguishing, seeing the desolation round. She never rose, but passed away from life to immortal dreams. And that's another reason I left old Skibbereen. Oh, you were only 2 years old, and feeble was your frame. I could not leave you with my friends, for you bore your father's name. I wrapped you in my coat the more, at the dead of the night unseen. And I heaved a sigh, and I said goodbye to dear old Skibbereen. Oh, well, Father dear, and the day will come when on vengeance we will call. And Irishmen, both stout and tall, will rally unto the call. I'll be the man to lead the van beneath the flag of green. And loud and high we'll raise the cry, revenge for Skibbereen.
Nothing is more vital to us than low oil prices right now at this time in our economy. And any way we can, we got to keep them down, by hook or by crook. Here's an article, I think this is from WorldNet Daily. Maybe Newsmax. Might be from Newsmax. And it says the Mexican drug cartels are exporting bloody mayhem to the U.S. Which brings up a point. The guy who's now accused of killing Chandra Levy was an illegal immigrant, but the press hid that fact from the American people. They hid it. In all their announcements, they just said he was a Salvadoran immigrant. They never said he was an illegal immigrant because they want the illegal immigrant issue to go away, to further undermine the United States, undermine the Constitution, undermine the language. Like Mike Savage says, borders, language, and culture, that's everything. And he's right. Undermine the Constitution, undermine the language, and undermine the borders. And that's the end of the country. We're going to become, like many people say, a banana republic. Without bananas. Mexican drug cartels. Oh, the Salvadoran has been involved in two other attacks on women. And he's also a member of a gang. Okay? And these gangs are big trouble, and they're all in the United States. So, what is it with bringing people into the United States? They have to be in a gang to get in here? Mexican drug cartels are shipping more than massive quantities of drugs. And you know whose fault the drug problem is? It's your fault, Mr. and Mrs. America, because you did them, and now you're teaching your kids how to do them. And you're the woodcrap generation, and you brought us hell. You brought us living hell. You couldn't defend your country, but you could sell it out. You went up to woodcrap, and you slid in crap. And you've appointed pimps and tramps to represent you. And now you're wondering why your kids are vegetables. Unaccomplishing vegetables. And you taught them how to do drugs. And the reason for the drug problem is because of Americans. I don't blame the Mexicans for the drug problem. I don't blame the Colombians. I blame the Americans, because the Americans are the ones who provided the incentive to bring them here. They provided the cash. Mexican drug cartels are shipping more than massive quantities of drugs north of the border. Increasingly, they are exporting bloody mayhem. Seeking to stem the growing influence in the Sinaloa cartel within the United States, federal agents arrested more than 60 suspects in raids Tuesday night and Wednesday morning in different ends of the country. I'm going to give you an example on how the police have their hands tied. Do you remember the girl, the 5-year-old girl, who was kidnapped from her house and was taken to a trailer? I think 100 yards away from her bed, and the police went there and they couldn't search the trailer. And I said to a cop who's a friend of mine, I said, you know what? If I was a cop, he says, you know what, Tom? The law ties their hands. They can't go in and look. I said, if I was a cop and I had a gut feeling that that kid was in there, I would have resigned. I would have turned over my badge and gun to the highest ranking officer at the time, and I would have ran in that trailer and I would have looked in that closet. I would have ransacked that trailer. And that girl was buried alive, and she was in a closet. And three people inside that trailer knew she was in there. Now, do you think you could do that? You think 100 years ago, the townspeople would allow somebody to kidnap a child and not look in the house? You don't think they would have thrown a rope over a tree and got some quick answers? They used to hang people for stealing horses. And today, we protect child murderers. Seeking to stem the growing influence of the Sinaloa cartel within the United States, federal agents arrested more than 50 suspects in raids tonight, Tuesday night and Wednesday, at different ends of the country. The raids capped a 21-month operation by the Drug Enforcement Administration that rounded up 755 suspects and seized more than $59 million in criminal proceeds. These cartels will be destroyed, Attorney General Eric Holder said. Sure, as long as they don't have pardon money, Eric. They can't get to you, said Wednesday at a press conference announcing the arrests. The overnight roundup by DEA and state and local... See, this is Eric Holder jumping on the platform to take credit for drug busts that were worked, planned, and executed by the Bush administration. And here's Eric taking credit for them. But I guarantee you, the first mention of pardon money, Eric will find a way to say we weren't within our rights. The overnight roundup by DEA and state and local police included arrests in California, Minnesota. How's that? Minnesota. And the Maryland suburbs of Washington. All Democrat strongholds. Holder called the cartels a threat to national security. Holder is a threat to national security. Adding, they are lucrative, they are violent, and they are operated with stunning planning and precision. Yeah, thanks to you, Eric. The Attorney General also suggested that reinstituting a U.S. ban on the sale of assault weapons. There you go. That's the ticket. Eric doesn't want to catch narcotics traficantes. No, he wants to catch Americans who legally own firearms. That's who he wants to take the guns away from. He loves the terrorists. He pardoned terrorists. He pardoned terrorists that tried to kill Harry Truman, the last real Democrat. He pardoned terrorists that killed cops on the White House lawn. He brought the names to President Pinocchio Pants, who left office with $107 million that he declared to the IRS. How's that for having a government job? No wonder. No wonder you got to work three jobs. You're feeding a junkie, a money junkie, the U.S. government. And they're using the money to kill you. There'll probably be a burial tax soon. Increasingly, U.S. law enforcement officials see cartel... the Attorney General also suggested that reinstituting a U.S. ban on the sale of assault weapons would help reduce the bloodshed in Mexico, where last year 6,000 people were killed in drug-related violence. How about closing the borders? I was talking today to somebody about graffiti and how Johnny's parents, who taught Johnny how to do drugs, move into a neighborhood and they buy a $500,000 house. And then they turn Johnny loose and he goes out with his little black can of spray paint and he lowers the real estate value in the entire neighborhood by 20%. And the police can't catch Johnny. So what do? They go after the hardware store guy for selling a black spray paint. And they make an example of him to teach Johnny not to do it again. Yeah, and they fine him. And they know where he is, and he's a law-abiding citizen, so he won't fight back. Yeah, and that's your government at work. Tax it, man. Increasingly, U.S. law enforcement officials see cartel violence is spilling to the United States. Hey, the handwriting's been on the wall for 30 years, 20 years. We're sputniking our country. As he discussed the problem, Holder spoke briefly in Spanish, pledging continued cooperation with Mexican authorities who have increasingly come under direct fire from the heavily armed drug gangs. Isn't it wonderful? We're bilingual now. Nobody can speak English, but everybody can speak Spanish. And I got nothing against Spanish. Not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm one of the few guys that pays a tribute to the real Spaniards, the ones who discovered this country, the ones who brought Christianity here, the ones who taught people to read and write in Spanish. And they have given us some great gifts. And they've named a lot of cities after saints and God. And even mountain ranges. Sierra Madre. Yeah, so I've got nothing against the Spanish. The Spanish were the pioneers of their time. And they brought civilization here. There was no civilization here. They were playing basketball with human heads here when the Spaniards came. And they changed it to soccer. Yeah, U.S. officials have a responsibility to make sure Mexican police are not fighting substantial numbers of weapons or fighting against AK-47s or fighting against the American border guards or other similar kinds of weapons that have been flowing to Mexico, Holder said. Yeah, this is what he's going to do. He's going to sacrifice Americans. He's probably part Aztec. How about stopping drugs, Eric? How about arresting half of your family? Leonard said that the Sinaloa cartel has become one of the largest organized crime operations in the world. Listen, money talks. And as long as your kids are buying drugs, and I'm surprised the government's not into drugs. It's another way to tax people. You know, hook them all and then tax them. You got a morphine, Jones? Okay, you got to pay an $80 tax. What? Have a marijuana. You never did drugs? Have a marijuana. It's legal, and looks like you got glaucoma. And then when you're up to heroin, see us, and we'll charge you a $100 tax. The government has taken all of the crime away from the mob and substituted taxes for it. They have driven the mob out of the numbers racket, the gambling racket. It's only a matter of time before the government takes over prostitution. And to save on the cost of equipment, they will probably import a Chinese women, because it's cheaper. And then they'll tax it. The government is into big vice. That's why they had to get rid of God. Because they want a tax on vice. And in order to tax it, they got to make it legal. Yeah, God stands in the way of taxes. The State Department issued a travel warning Friday, urging U.S. citizens, especially dumb college kids, traveling to Mexico to be aware of the increased threat of violence and kidnapping. Yeah, and all the guys that were cutting the throats down there with sombreros were speaking Arabic. Especially along the border. The situation in Ciudad de Juarez, which lies across the border from El Paso, is of special concern, the State Department cautioned. And I heard some woman on, she was representing the Mexican tourism industry, saying how safe it is. Oh, it's safe, it's safe. It also issued an advisory on spring break in Mexico. Yeah, where more than 100,000 U.S. citizens visit each year. The department warns of an increased violence along the border and advises revelers in Matamoros and Nuevo Progreso. Oh yeah, new progress. That's it. That's the American way. Popular destinations for spring breakers on South Padre Island, Texas, to exercise common sense precautions, such as visiting only the well-traveled business and tourism areas of border towns during daylight. And don't be alarmed if the busboy is carrying a machine gun. Yeah, we have done it to ourselves. All of this crap, is we have brought it all on ourselves. We are Uncle Sap. Now let me cheer you up with a tune about a guy that stole a goose. I call this the Irish Mojo.
Oh, my name it is Nell, and the truth for to tell, I come from Coat Hill, which I'll never deny. I had a fine drake, and I die for his sake, that my grandmother left me, and she gone to die. The dear little fellow, his legs they were yellow, he could fly like a swallow, or swim like a hake. Till some dirty savage took a his white cabbage, most wantonly murdered me beautiful drake. Now his neck it was green, almost fit to be seen, he was fit for a queen of the highest degree. His body was white, and it would you delight, he was plump, fat, and heavy, and brisk as a bee. He was wholesome and sound, he would weigh 20 pounds, and the universe round I would roam for his sake. Bad luck to the robber, be he drunk or sober, that murdered Nell Flaherty's beautiful drake. May his spade never dig, may his sow never pig, may each hair in his wig be well thrashed with the flail. May his door never latch, may his roof have no thatch, may his turkeys not hatch, may the rats eat his mail. May every old fairy from Cork to Dunleary dip him snug and airy in river or lake. That the eel and the trout they may dine on the snout of the monster that murdered Nell Flaherty's drake. May his pig never grunt, may his cat never hunt, may a ghost ever haunt him at dead of the night. May his hens never lay, may his horse never neigh, may his goat fly away like an old paper kite. That the flies and the fleas may the wretch ever tease, may the piercing March breeze make him shiver and shake. May a lump of a stick raise the bumps fast and thick on the monster that murdered Nell Flaherty's drake. Well, the only good news that I have to infuse is that old Paddy Hughes and young Anthony Blake, also Johnny Dwyer and Corny Maguire, they each have a grandson of my darling Drake. My treasure had dozens of nephews and cousins, and one I must get or my heart it will break. For to set me mind dizzy, or else I'll run crazy. So ends the whole song of Nell Flaherty's drake.
And now we have parents who put aside a portion of their retirement to give their kids an education at 40 G's a year, and they turn on the TV at Eastertide, and they see their daughter on spring break, topless, working for beads. I wonder how they're going to feel in their golden years. You think they can sit down with their children and say, look, we lost everything in the stock market for our retirement, and we'd like to recall the loan we gave you for your college education? You think you could help out Dad and Mom? Mom? Mom, who's Mom? I was raised independently. How about spending 40 G's a year to have your kid stand up and denounce capitalism? How about spending 40 G's a year to... I forgot what I was going to say. My uncle once told me a joke about a guy that spent 40 G's a year to send his son to Italy to be educated at the finest university. And he came home and him and his dad were walking down the street on the beach one evening. And he looked up at the moon and he said to his father, "Is that the same moon they have in Italy?" Yeah, we don't have scientists and mathematicians anymore. We have liberal arts parts. Everybody's going to be in drama. I know what I forgot. You spend 40 G's a year to send your kid there to get a higher education, and the first thing they do is correct your English. Yeah, how quick they forget who taught them how to wipe. All the people that said never trust anybody over 30 are now over 30. Nobody believed the domino theory and the threat of communism, but they can't poll 2.5 million Cambodian dominoes. What's a 2.5 million townspeople? We kill 1.4 million a year. What's the difference between us and Pol Pot? Call us Pol Pothead. Yeah, I was on spring break and now I gotta kill the kid. But I was cool.
Got this burning and feeling it's deep inside. I've been up all night crying like a child. You brought me down, 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 down. You knocked my feet right off the ground. Yes, you did. 'Cause I've been gone too long from where I belong, in the holy ground, to the holy ground. But I got this strong, strong soul left in guiding me. It's gonna take my hand, it's gonna set me free, and I'll be bound for my bound. Well, I'm going back to the holy ground, yes I am. 'Cause I've been gone too long from where I belong, in the holy ground.
Finish up with a Danny Boy on flute, and I'm going to dedicate it to all the Americans who are going to give their lives for their country and go unnoticed by an ungrateful nation who complains about secondhand smoke and global warming as the greatest threats to America. And all those young Danny boys who will pay the price so we can remain stupid and naive. Thank you for your sacrifice, because this administration is not going to acknowledge you at all. And the media will cover up your deaths. Thank you for what you do. You saved my country. And to those people who talk about this country like they own it and have no skin in the game, never served it, only serve it up, may you get your dues. And thanks to the guys who pay your dues.
We have 15 minutes left, and I've got a piece called Lemonology, Part 2. I don't know what it is, but we're gonna play it, because I don't think I ever aired it.
Hang you out to dry with this report from the Sovereign Society, and this is some of the top contributors to the Obama campaign, and they've circled three in red. And the biggest contributor, the number one contributor to the Obama campaign, was the University of California. They donated $1,124,000. Second was Goldman Sachs with $955,000. Third was Microsoft with $791,000. Fourth was Google with $782,000. Fifth was Harvard with 779,000. Sixth was J.P. Chase. J.P. Chase, who ruined my credit rating. Yeah, with 633,000 in the high interest of credit card payments. Next is Sidley Austin, LLP, 565,000. Next is Stanford University, 558,000. Next is Time Warner. Is that CNN? 542,000. National Amusements. This House and Senate is a national amusement. 536,000. Wilmer Hale LLP. 522,000. Skadden Arms et al. 505,000. Union Bank of Switzerland. 505,000. Columbia Communist University with 502,000. IBM with 489. Morgan Stanley with 483,000. U.S. government of 477,000. University of Chicago, 456,000. We'll look at that back. Bill Ayers will bring them twice that amount in a paper bag. Latham's and Watkins, 454,000. Now, these guys are circled three. They circled Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and UBS. I'm going to check and see why they circled those three, and I'll tell you when I come back. So here is what I found. According to a sovereign, they are saying, you see, something strange happened on the way to the Treasury. After months of Obama railing against the wicked ways of corporate lobbyists, and never forget, the Democrats have been in power for 2 years before the election of Obama. They have been railroading the country for 2 years. Bush was finished 2 years before he left office. After months of Obama railing against the wicked ways of corporate lobbyists, Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury, appointed the former chief lobbyist of Goldman Sachs to serve as his head of staff. Just wait, it gets better. Geithner's new deputy secretary is a former CEO of Citigroup. Another CFO from Citigroup is now assistant to the president, and one of his assistants also came from Citigroup, whose stock is $1.85 today. I grew up on Citibank. I grew up on banking with Citibank. I got my first business loan from Citibank. I put up stock as collateral to get the loan. Try that now. Another CFO from Citigroup is now assistant to the president, and one of his assistants also came from Citigroup. To finish out the roster, a member of Obama's Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Yeah, he used to work at UBS. But wait, there's more. Geithner's brain trust of unofficial advisors includes John Thain, T-H-A-I-N, who formerly worked with both Goldman and Merrill Lynch, Gerald Corrigan, another former Goldman exec, and Hank Paulson, yet another former Goldman exec. The icing on the cake here is Alan Greenspan, who exploited his own disastrous mismanagement of the Federal Reserve in a brief stint with PIMCO last year, who also got a Geithner's ear. Which leads us to ask, who's running the ship? That's from a sovereign, okay? Now, I'll tell you what I see that I don't like. I see Volpe. Who was brought in to investigate the oil for bribes at the UN, and he covered up for all his UN cronies. I don't trust him. I don't trust anything that has to do with the UN. I don't think we should even be involved with the UN. We should maybe send a Boy Scout as an ambassador and only as an observer. I don't think we should have anything to do with the UN whatsoever. It would make a nice hotel. Now, let's take a look at Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is doing very well at these times. Their stock, I think, was around $84 a share today. But I don't like what I see. Goldman Sachs seems to be taking over the government. And I also remember that John Corzine, a flag burner and baby killer of record, okay, who used to be a senator and is now governor of the state of New Jersey, who spent $51 million to win the nomination for governor and the election, is also a Goldman Sachs graduate, and he made a lot of money at Goldman Sachs. I do not trust a Goldman Sachs. Hang in there, and we'll give you another hero song. Also on the vein of Kevin, Barry is Nathan Hale. I dedicate this tune to the Marine who wasn't even named last night at the Obama rally. They just pointed to him up in the audience and they looked at him. So both he and a corporal named Anzac, who was fished out of the Euphrates River after being tortured, captured and tortured, okay, and whose body was sent home in a flag-draped coffin. Both he and that Marine who sat in the balcony last night, this tune is dedicated to them.
In Mountjoy Jail, one Monday morning, high upon the gallows tree, Kevin Barry gave his young life for the cause of liberty. Just a lad of 18 summers, yet there's no one can deny how he walked to death that morning. He proudly held his head up. Just before he faced the hangman, in his dreary prison cell, British soldiers tortured Barry just because he would not. The name of his brave comrade and other things they wish to know, turning former, or we'll kill you, Kevin. Calmly standing to attention as he bids his last farewell to his broken-hearted mother, whose sad grief no one can tell. For the cause he proudly cherished, this sad parting had to be. Then to death walked softly smiling, that old heart
That's our show, folks. Good night to Felix. Good night to Moving Forward. Good night to Brian. And we'll meet again.